Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is March the 10th, 2017. We're rolling right along. Spring is supposed to be almost here, and here in New York, we've gone from balmy weather last week to the refrigerator, maybe the freezer this week. Wherever you are, I hope the weather is good, and I hope you are well, and I thank you for joining me. Those of you familiar with me, familiar with my program, know that I'm a retired senior special agent of the former Immigration and Naturalization Service, and you know that ever since 9/11, I have been, in effect, the man on a mission. My goal has been to provide the information on the nexus between failures of the immigration system and the terror attacks of 9/11, and in other instances as well. Additionally, we also need to consider the impact of illegal immigration and failures of the immigration system that have been harmful to criminal justice, to the ability of gangs, transnational gangs, narcotics trafficking organizations, a whole slew of folks who don't have our best interests at heart, to gain access to our country and set up shops in towns and cities across America. And this is not a statement of xenophobia. You know, we have locks on our doors. We have peepholes on our doors. And we have doorbells so that the stranger who wants to visit has to knock on the door, ring the bell, somehow get our consent to come in. And we are, if we are smart, careful about who we let in. You're not antisocial if you ask who's there before you unlock your door. And that's what this is about. But, of course, the phony narrative being foisted on America, foisted on Americans by the politicians, by the special interest groups, by the globalists, if you will, has really made an honest conversation about immigration all but impossible. And that is what I am trying to do wherever and whenever I can, to engage in those vital conversations, to be the mythbuster, to get people to understand what we're really discussing. You would think it would be easy. But unfortunately, in this wacky era of Orwellian newspeak, of news media that has an agenda, and the agenda should only be about getting it right, it's difficult. And increasingly, the mainstream media, if you watch TV, you know most programs, while they will bring on subject matter experts, if the story is about the space program or aviation or, God forbid, a plane crash, or a homicide, or cancer research, they'll bring in the true subject matter experts, whether it's an astronaut, a scientist, a retired detective, doesn't matter, former military, pardon me, they bring in the actual experts to tell you what's going on, to provide their analysis, to provide their perspectives. They used to do that with immigration, but no more. Almost inevitably, when the discussion turns to immigration, the news media bring in the pundits, the pollsters, and the politicians. God help us. And it's done with a reason. This is not an accident. This is not an accident because the push to take down our borders has never been stronger. Pardon me. Forgive me this evening. I have something of a sore throat. I guess the change in temperature or something has gotten to me, but I decided that I wanted to go on with the program this evening because there is so much to talk about, and I do hope that my program provides you with those perspectives that you find helpful. And if you do, what I ask you to do is join what I've come to call my Bucket Brigade of Truth and tell as many of your friends and neighbors and even those who disagree with you, perhaps especially those who disagree with you, about my efforts, my program, the articles that I write for Front Page Magazine. I do a ton of writing for frontpagemag.com. For years, I've been writing for capsweb.org, Californians for Population Stabilization. And I also do a lot of writing for The Social Contract. And in fact, their spring edition is coming out. And as things now stand, my article will be the lead article for the spring edition. I will also, it would appear to be that I will be contributing a second article as well. and it's my favorite price. It's free. It will be available on the internet. And I will post it on my website. And of course, my website is my favorite. It's Michael Cutler, one word, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. And by the way, please also consider using social media to cast as wide a net to let as many people as possible know about my efforts. It's really important we get it right. And this is not about xenophobia. And you know, to her credit, a young lady by the name of Wendy Wilson interviewed me for the Tennessee Star, which is an online newspaper. I believe they also publish an actual newspaper. And so I was very surprised because I had never spoken with her previously. She reached out to me for an interview. And usually you could spend an hour with a reporter, and then if you're lucky, there's two sentences in the article. Then you say, wow. And then they very often get it wrong. Well, Wendy got it right. It was a very long article, and much of it focused on what we discussed during our lengthy conversation. And in fact, the title of the article reflected that, because her article was entitled, Former INS Agent Michael Cutler, Illegal Immigrants Should Be Fearful, People Demanding Enforcement Are Not Haters. I have to tell you, she did a great job, and that stands in stark contrast to a report that has been circulating all week about Gold Star father, a guy by the name of Khazir Khan. And if you remember Khazir Khan, he was the guy at the Democratic Convention who jumped to his feet, was waving that copy of the Constitution, said that he had paid the sacrifice because his son was killed overseas, a member of the U.S. military, and certainly we should honor his son's death. Anybody who lays their life on the line for America is a hero. But I don't think he really honored his son's memory. He attacked Donald Trump. And that's fine. You can attack politicians. I mean, I've been hammering away at the politicians from both political parties for a very long time. I hate both parties, but let's be fair about it. And what the narrative that the Democratic Party is trying desperately to create is that Donald Trump is a racist and a bigot. And you know, we heard Hillary Clinton go out there, the bucket or the basket of deplorables, you know, the xenophobes and this phobe and that phobe. The only real phobe I have and disgust is for Miss Hillary herself. You know, in the name of the Democratic Party, to flood America with cheap labor, to destroy the wage structure, the jobs and opportunities for Americans, especially Americans of color, Americans living in poverty, and even middle-class Americans who have gone to school, spent a ton of money on their education, and maybe put years of their lives into their professions as computer programmers, scientists, engineers, you know, the STEM people, science, technology, engineering, and math, so that they could get more voters and they could then get the campaign contributions. And the Republicans have not been better. Look, Ted Cruz was the guy who talked frequently about American exceptionalism and then said, we're going to get America to lead. And the fools go out there clapping like a bunch of trained seals. Then he says, we're going to get America to lead by importing the world's best and brightest. Well, we have a name for the world's best and brightest, irrespective of race, religion, ethnicity, gender, you know, what I call the superficial factors. At the end of the day, we're all human beings and we're all Americans. Folks, the world's best and brightest, all Americans. Americans built the Panama Canal. Americans first broke the sound barrier, Chuck Yeager. You know, I had a bout with prostate cancer. For those guys out there over 40, please keep up with your PSA. It's really important to be tested. That's the only reason I'm still here, which is a good thing because I haven't aggravated my quota yet. My wife went out to cheer me up, bought me a model of the X-1, the plane that Yeager flew to break the sound barrier back in 1947. We did it first. We sent men to the moon repeatedly and returned them safely. No one has sent anybody to the moon yet. We've sent space probes hurtling out of the solar system repeatedly. No other country has done that. But yet the globalists like Ted Cruz turn around and say, oh, we've got to bring in the world's best and brightest. Save the airfare, Ted. They're here. They're Americans. and they are black, and they are white, they're Latino, they're Asian, they're every flavor. But what binds us all together is the fact that we are Americans. So when you look at the nonsense being foisted on us, I wrote last week and I talked about it, Chuck Schumer saying, let's put trespassers in jail when they climb on infrastructure or they climb on a landmark and they're here and they shouldn't be in those locations. This should be a federal crime, 5 years in jail. And he even talked about a 16-year-old kid, an apparent airhead, who climbed the World Trade Center to take a selfie. And Schumer's convinced that kid should be in jail for 5 years, apparently. But when you trespass on America, Chuck Schumer wants to give you citizenship. Citizenship, the highest honor a nation can bestow upon a foreign national. This is the kind of duplicitous nonsense we are hearing from both political parties, because they are globalists. And along comes a president, first one that I can recall, who rather than be a globalist is a populist, and you have people protesting Donald Trump. They are cheering the Democrats, and they're cheering all this nonsense that's being foisted on them and us. You know, when I watch those demonstrations, the anti-Trump crowd, and they're cheering and they're ranting and they're raving. They remind me of a flock of chickens going to a KFC commercial and getting all excited because Colonel Sanders has announced a new recipe for fried chicken. That's what they remind me of. They don't seem to understand that what the political parties have been doing to Americans, not for Americans, for decades, is to flood America with cheap labor as a wage suppression tactic. That's what it's about. And hundreds of billions of dollars a year are being wired out of our country back to the home countries of foreign workers, whether they're here legally or illegally. And Donald Trump comes up and, not unlike the other politician, says, I'm bringing jobs back to America. But then he adds a sentence that I haven't heard before. I've dreamed of hearing it before, but Trump is the first one to say it. I'm going to bring jobs back to America and have those jobs done by American hands. And people are protesting. People are protesting that you have a president who wants to put American workers and their families first. You know, H.L. Mencken was right when he said no one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the average American. This is music to everyone's ears. Get Americans back to work. Don't just bring the jobs here. Make sure that Americans get those jobs. Americans get first shot. What in the world is the point to having a government if the government doesn't represent your best interests, your safety and security, the safety and security of your family, the safety and security of your children and your grandchildren? First and foremost, that's what governments are supposed to do. Look out for the citizens of that country. And today, God forbid, you should talk about putting American citizens first, and you're called nativist and racist. They come up with this notion, and I've spoken about it repeatedly, about Latino voters and black voters and Jewish voters and evangelical voters. They've got us sliced and diced into little cubby holes, as though if you're a Latino, you want something different from somebody who isn't a Latino, even though you're both American citizens. It's the height of stupidity and arrogance. It's disgusting, it's bigotry, it's a form of profiling, and we have to see it for what it is. Why would any American, whether his or her last name is Rodriguez or Ramirez or Garcia, want something different from an American whose last name is Smith, Jackson, or Goldstein? We all want to live in a country that is secure against its enemies by the military. We want to know that it's safe to walk out of your house and go down the block to do shopping or go for a ride. And we want to know that the schools provide our people and our children and our grandchildren with quality educations, and that any American, irrespective of race, ethnicity, religion, gender, can write the next American success story if that American is willing to study hard, work hard, and perhaps benefit from a little bit of old-fashioned luck. That's what we all want. And when you hear this notion, oh, the Latinos aren't going to like that the president is going to secure the border, why? You have Senator Menendez of New Jersey calling it a wall of hate. I think Menendez is having a problem understanding the configuration of walls and borders and ports of entry. the point to the wall isn't to block the port of entry, but to make certain that all cargo and all people seeking entry into the United States go through that port of entry so they can be inspected, which, by the way, is a requirement of our laws and is a requirement of the laws of all countries. Otherwise, without borders, you don't have a country. You know, I've often said that a country without secure borders can no more stand than can a house without walls. And when you look at how much has come across that border without inspection, forget that undocumented crap, without inspection, that leads us to the problem that we have with the potential for terrorists and criminals and fugitives and cheap labor and drugs and weapons. So we want to know that anything or anyone coming into America is scrutinized, inspected, so that we're protected. That's it. That's it. It's the difference between allowing people to climb through your bedroom window at 3 a.m. or somehow, because there's something wrong with you, you want them to come through the front door only when you've invited them in. Yet in Menendez's world, it's a wall of hate. I think Mr. Menendez hates Americans. I think he's happy that narcotics are pouring into the United States and gangs and criminals, because that's the only rational decision you could come to. And if Mr. Menendez disagrees with me, I'd like to have that conversation. I want to know why he thinks it's okay when we have demonstrated just how porous our borders are, that if you would make an effort to secure that border, not against all entry, Mr. Menendez, but illegal entry, that now you are a hater. I don't know what Mr. Menendez's IQ is, but goodness gracious, how does that make sense to anybody when you have a problem where drugs are pouring so freely into the United States? The demand for heroin has never been higher, yet the price has never been lower, and heroin is not produced in the United States. Every single solitary molecule, every single solitary gram of heroin that's present in the United States was smuggled in, not just across the Mexican border, but the Canadian border, through the ships, through the seaports, through our coastline, and through international airports. But it's all smuggled into the United States. How in the world can you say, oh, we don't need to put up a wall to prevent the entry of criminals, terrorists, and narcotics into the United States? We don't need to put up a wall to protect Americans who need their jobs so they can support themselves and their families? If you don't want that border secure, then you don't give a rat's tail about Americans or their children. It's just that simple. This is not complicated. This is like a mayor of a town saying, okay, let's make sure everyone leaves their doors unlocked at night because we're going to be welcoming. Come to think of it, isn't that what a sanctuary city is? A city with no doors, a city that does not respect the immigration laws, which are, after all, our first and last line of defense. We spend over $14 billion a year on Customs and Border Protection. They employ over 60,000 people, and President Trump wants to increase those numbers, and I agree with him. He also wants to greatly increase the number of ICE agents, and boy, that's music to my ears, because that's really what's been lacking for decades. But with all the money we're spending on the Border Patrol and the inspectors at ports of entry, and I remind you that for the first 4 years of my career with the old Immigration and Naturalization Service, for 4 years, I sat in an inspection booth at Kennedy International Airport. I was an inspector. Well, if it doesn't matter how you get here, then I would challenge any mayor of a sanctuary city, any governor of a sanctuary state, and people like Senators Menendez and McCain and Graham, here's my question. Would you be okay with dismantling the Border Patrol? Would you be okay with not inspecting anybody who gets off of airplanes when they arrive from foreign countries? Would you be okay if airplanes coming into the United States from Europe, from Asia, from the Caribbean, from Africa, from the Middle East, wherever, would you be okay if those passengers were able to just get off the airplane, grab their suitcase, and disappear? If the answer is you're not okay with it, then you have to accept that that border needs to be secured. Otherwise, you're either a fool or a liar. So you have a choice. Which is it? I've had it up to here with the nonsense. The Border Patrol reported this past week that illegal entries were down by 40% along the Mexican border. And I've always been skeptical about the statistics. Let's not, you know, sugarcoat stuff. So, you know, when I see how they determine those numbers, I'll be happier. But if it's accurate, it proves something I've said a long time ago, that the solution to illegal immigration is deterrence through enforcement, just like we've done with drunk driving or texting while driving or tax evasion. If people are doing things that are illegal and that are undesirable, then the obvious solution is to enforce the law more effectively and impose greater punishments to act as a deterrent. When I testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee in 2013, March of 2013, almost exactly 4 years ago, wow, time goes quickly, I said that the immigration policies of the Obama administration had, in essence, fired the starter's pistol for aspiring illegal aliens from around the world. And for these folks, the finish line was the border of the United States, because they knew that once they got past that border, they were home free. And Donald Trump, you know, talk about unleash the hounds, he's unleashed the ICE agents. And he did something that's brilliant. And I'm not trying to dislocate my shoulder, but I have in the past spoken to people who are now part of the administration, and this sounds remarkably similar to something that I had said. What the Obama administration did was to declare certain categories of illegal aliens to be off limits to the ICE agents. Never mind they're here illegally. if they don't have this kind of a criminal conviction or that kind of a criminal conviction or whatever, don't arrest them. And if perchance some hapless agent did arrest such an alien, oh my God, they were looking at the potential for discipline, including suspension without pay and even being fired. When I was an agent, we used to have an expression, big cases, big problems, little cases, little problems, no cases. No problems. And when you tell agents that if you arrest the wrong illegal alien, you could pay with your paycheck or your job, I mean, you want to strike terror into someone's heart, that's how you do it. You want to inhibit people from doing their job, that's how you do it. And part of one of Trump's executive orders said that there is no such thing as any protected group of illegal aliens. Pardon me. In other words, agent makes a determination that a foreign national, that an alien standing in front of him or in front of her, we certainly have quite a few women these days. When I started, we had all of two female agents in my office back in 75 when I first got to be an agent. Today, the numbers are way different, as it should be. But if you have an illegal alien in front of you now as an ICE agent, and you arrest that agent, nobody is going to come after you and say, why did you arrest the wrong illegal alien? If the person is illegally present, they are subject to arrest. Yes, let's focus on the criminals. But you need to maintain the integrity of the immigration system by making what I call collateral arrests, so that nobody says, oh, he's only an illegal alien. It's not an only. It's not an only. And by the way, if you look at the 9/11 Commission report, and I wish some supposed journalists and legal whiz kids who appear on TV periodically would look at the 9/11 Commission report. It might open their eyes a little bit, maybe a tiny. But they talked about how most of the illegals, or most of the aliens, that is to say, who engaged in terrorism didn't run the border but came through international airports. So when I hear, you know, legal experts say, oh, someone just only violated a visa, don't bother, it's too expensive to deport them. And I've heard that on a network. Shocking. Then don't bother with them. That advice is terrible advice. It flies in the face of the 9/11 Commission findings. But you see, there's no immigration agents on these programs to say to their judicial experts, their legal experts, hey, you're getting it wrong. You're getting it wrong. Because there's a narrative in place, viewed by everybody. Only an immigration law violation. An alien who runs the border and has been previously deported and has a criminal history can face up to 20 years in jail. I helped Al D'Amato write that damn law back in the early 80s. 20 years in jail isn't an only. It's not a minor crime. It's not a slap on the wrist. Tate's law was supposed to do that, but in fact, the aggravated felon reentry law, and you can look it up. Everything I tell you is verifiable. Or go to my website, or go to capsweb.org, or frontpagemag.com, or the Social Contract. Look for my articles. Forgive me, this throat of mine is going away. Title 8, United States Code, Section 1326B. And that is the statute that deals with what are known as aggravated felon reentries. Aliens with serious criminal histories who get deported, come back, they face a max of 20 years in jail. Aliens who commit visa fraud in conjunction with, or actually by themselves, I think is now either a 10 or a 15-year crime. It's been a while. If they commit visa fraud to commit a crime in addition to being here illegally, the penalty for visa fraud is 20 years in jail. And if they committed visa fraud in order to carry out a terrorist attack, that becomes a 25-year felony. There's not that many crimes in the federal statutes that call for 25 years in jail. These are serious crimes. And you don't know who the terrorist is very often until the day after there's a loud kaboom. You know, the day before an attack, a terrorist is likely to hide in plain sight by going to his or her job. Often a job that requires mobility. So it's a bus driver, a cab driver, limo driver, airport van driver, ice cream truck driver, school bus driver. And we've seen other jobs too. I arrested a guy suspected of involvement with terrorism who's working as a dishwasher in a restaurant out on Staten Island here in New York City. So this nonsense, oh, he only violated the immigration law, and I love it, and they paid their taxes. This has nothing to do with taxes. This has everything to do with national security, public safety, and the welfare of American citizens. So when I hear this absolute utter BS, and when I hear the nonsense, well, if the guy is illegal and he ran the border 7 years ago, and now he's being a good boy and he's paying his taxes, there we go again, and he's not bothering anybody. Well, that's what sleeper agents sometimes do. People that come here and spend years peacefully, quietly waiting for that tap on the shoulder or the phone call. And by the way, how do you know how long an illegal alien has been present in the United States? Again, this is not a question that's ever asked or answered on those programs. Think about it. If we were going to legalize unknown tens of millions, forget that 11 million nonsense fake number. Ronald Reagan told us that we would deal with about a million, maybe a million and a quarter illegal aliens when the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986 passed. We wound up with almost 4 million, three or four times as many. In 2007, the Congressional Budget Office estimated there were 12 million illegal aliens here. That was 10 years ago. Now we're being told 11 million. You mean a million went away? I doubt it. We don't know who's here. And the other part of it, if we declare any kind of a legalization program, how many people could sneak in and then claim they were here for the requisite period of time? Now realize when you're dealing with millions upon millions of people, there will be no interviews. There will be no field investigations. And when an alien sneaks in, trespasses, you know, think of what I just said about Schumer. There's no record of that alien's entry into the United States that's created. And when you find somebody who's been using 5, 6, 7, 8 multiple false identities, and you know that it only takes minutes to approve an application, days or weeks to deny an application, so guess what happens? These folks know what they have to say. They know what the magic date will be. Just like with the Dreamers, they have to claim they came here before they were 16. Is it true? Who knows, but they could be as old as 31. No interviews, no field investigations, and they ran the border, so we don't know. So we're making presumptions. If they've been here for 7 years, if my grandmother had different genitals, she would have been my grandfather, as the Yiddish expression goes. We don't know, and what we don't know can get us killed, and it has gotten Americans and others killed, right here in our own country. But you're not going to hear this on TV. And so we come to the story that I wrote for Front Page Magazine that was just published this morning. And I couldn't resist. I called it Con Job. Gezira Khan claims his travel privileges are being reviewed. He was apparently supposed to engage in a speaking event up in Toronto and claims that he got a notification that, quote, his travel privileges are being reviewed. He never said who said it. He never gave any information about what that even meant or why they were doing it. And the Speakers Bureau that he's supposedly working with, Ramsey Talks, issued a release. And I'll read this to you. Gezira Khan event cancellation. Late Sunday evening, Gezira Khan, an American citizen for over 30 years, was notified that his travel privileges are being reviewed. What reviewed means, I don't know either. They didn't say revoked, but reviewed, but okay. By whom? The airline? The bus company? Right? As a consequence, Mr. Khan will not be traveling to Toronto on March 7th to speak about tolerance, understanding, unity, and the rule of law. Very regretfully, Ramsey Talks must cancel his luncheon, its luncheon with Mr. Khan. Guests will be given full refunds. Mr. Khan offered his sincere apologies to all those who made plans to attend on March 7th, and he said, "This turn of events is not just of deep concern to me, but to all of my fellow Americans who cherish our freedom to travel abroad. I have not been given any reason as to why, but I am grateful for your support and look forward to visiting Toronto in the near future." What in the world are we talking about? Because if you look at the law, and immigration is law and regulation. Once an immigration inspector, and remember, I did this job for 4 years. Once an inspector is convinced that the person seeking entry is an American citizen, under no circumstances, for any reason, any way, shape, or form, can that American be denied entry into the United States. If an American shows up with the Ebola virus, you can't say to that man or woman or boy or girl or whatever, "We're not letting you in, you're too sick." Americans have to be admitted, period. And if you read my article, because I want you to read it, not just listen to me, you will see that the inspector's handbook, which is basically the Bible for all inspectors, was released under a Freedom of Information request. For years they fought it, but they finally released it. And you can see what it says there about the admission of Americans back into the United States. You can see what the law says about the admissions of aliens into the United States. And I also included the section of law that deals with providing passports for Americans seeking to travel abroad. Generally, the only convicted felons who can't get a passport, and that's just not to say that the other country will accept a convicted felon. That's a whole other story. Martha Stewart wasn't allowed to go to England, from what I remember reading several years ago, because of her conviction for her shenanigans with the stocks that she owned. But as far as giving her a passport, yeah, we'll give you a passport and let the country you want to go to decide if they're going to admit you. The only instances where that doesn't happen is if you have somebody facing felony charges and part of the bail package is a requirement that you turn the passport over to the judge, to the court, because they don't want the person to flee the jurisdiction. International drug traffickers, people convicted of those crimes, may also face a censor or censure where they won't get a passport. But it's a very limited number of people. So to have this gentleman, Mr. Khan, make these assertions, "Oh, I was told that I can't travel." And then he goes on and says, "Oh, this should be of great concern to all Americans." This goes with the notion that by putting up a wall, we've turned America into East Berlin. You know, "Oh, they had a wall in Germany, and Ronald Reagan went there and said, tear down that wall." Well, wait a minute. The Germans built that wall in East Germany to keep their people from running away, not to keep people from coming in. Prisons have high gates, right, with barbed wire. The White House has a very high gate, doesn't it? And they even have people, snipers, on the rooftop the way they do in jails with high-powered weapons. But the reason isn't to keep the occupants of the White House in, but to prevent intruders from gaining entry. Slight difference. Is the door opening or closing? You know, which way is the door swinging here, folks? So it almost sounds like, maybe I'm wrong, but it sounds like Mr. Khan is trying to create this illusion that because Donald Trump is now sitting in the Oval Office, this evil guy that he thinks he is, that he claims him to be, who doesn't know the Constitution, he said. That was what Khan said at the Democratic Convention about Donald Trump. That somehow we've now become, you know, citizens of a police state who can't leave the country at will. That seems to be the narrative. We now live in a police state, congratulations, and pretty soon they will put up a wall so Americans can't leave, and even if you have a passport, you're not going anywhere because you're in a police state, congratulations. It's nonsense. It's an absurdity. But there are enough foolish people that will listen to this. They won't bother to do their homework, and some of them are supposed journalists, and they will jump up and down and say, oh, my God, Donald Trump won't let this poor man whose son was killed fighting for America in the military go to Toronto and speak about unity and rule of law and so forth. And then it's remarkable because shortly afterwards, on May 7th, the day of the event, the Washington Post, liberal paper, said Khizr Khan's claim that the U.S. is restricting his travel may be unraveling. You think? See, here's the point. If our president does something wrong, and I have testified at congressional hearings where the Republicans controlled Congress and I criticized President Bush, and they encourage me to come and testify. No one is above the law. The leader of South Korea is finding that out, isn't she? Nobody is above the law. And if I think my president is wrong, then I'm going to speak out. I'm not bashful. I wouldn't have this radio program if I was bashful. I wouldn't go on national TV and radio if I was bashful. I certainly wouldn't go before congressional hearings. So I don't mince words. But if there are criticisms, that's fine. Let's have them. Let's know what's going on. This is the democracy that we live in, folks. But when people spew utter nonsense and falsehoods and the false narrative and fake news, this is not the best you can do. And, you know, credibility is a very funny thing. If you're right 1,000 times, nobody will remember it the first time you're wrong. The first time you're wrong, everyone is going to say, oh, that guy is a BS artist. Bear with me 1 second. Oh, when your throat goes away, there's nothing like hot tea with honey. Oh, goodness. Forgive me. So the point that I'm making to you is that if Mr. Khan really has a problem with the policies of Mr. Trump, and by the way, Mr. Khan was a Harvard-educated lawyer, came to America, had opportunities that many Americans could only wish to have. So as an attorney who worked for a rather prominent law firm, did lobbying and so forth, with that kind of background, it's not like you're dealing with somebody who barely crawled out of school, doesn't know what he's talking about, and he's making an honest mistake. I think Mr. Khan is a very bright man. I think he's very smart. He's very accomplished. So if he's saying things that aren't true, and let him defend himself and tell me that I'm getting it wrong, then you could say, well, he made a mistake. This isn't a mistake. There is no mechanism for an inspector at an airport to turn away an American citizen. And if the government is not going to issue a passport to someone, and you have to believe he already had his passport or travel document that's necessary to cross the two borders. In fact, I contributed to that effort. It was called the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative that required that when going between Canada and Mexico, you have to have either a passport or a document that suffices as a passport included in that list now or enhanced driver's licenses. So, you know, you have to presume he had his paperwork in order before he left, or wanted to leave, actually. He never got to leave. So what is he talking about? If he had his passport, if he had whatever the other alternative documents, and there's a list of those, if he had those, who called him up and what did they tell him? And if nobody called him, and you go public with this kind of a story, it's the boy who cried wolf. You know, maybe he thought this was a way to political success. If I go out there and beat the drum and beat up on Donald Trump, then, you know, the Democrats will love me and I can run for office. You know, I don't know. Maybe. I didn't speak to the guy. I don't know him from a hole in the wall. But I'm very disturbed when I see this kind of nonsense being spewed in the news. And it's not that I'm defending Donald Trump. I have no reason to defend him. But I think he's trying to do something that I have yet to see, that I haven't seen a president do in decades. Stand up for the average American family, the average American worker, because administration after administration got us into this mess. Carter, who said we can't use the term illegal alien, who ordered immigration agents to not arrest illegal aliens during the census. It was about gerrymandering congressional seats and electoral votes in the Electoral College. Ronald Reagan with the first amnesty and not hiring more agents. And, you know, Bill Clinton came along and ignored what should have been pretty obvious after two terror attacks carried out in 93 by Middle Eastern men, the shooting at the CIA, the first Trade Center bombing, which literally left the door open to 9/11. George W. Bush, who called the Minutemen vigilantes, stood shoulder to shoulder with Vicente Fox and saw to it that two Border Patrol agents trying to do their job by the name of Ramos and Compion. And if you read the testimony, and I've written about it for Front Page Magazine and for capsweb.org, that the way that DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, was created under the George W. Bush administration made it impossible to secure our borders or enforce our immigration laws. So, you know, these are globalists. And I don't even want to talk about Barack Obama because I could go on, you know, until my next show next week. And so finally, along comes Donald Trump and says, no, we're going to make sure Americans do the jobs. American hands will do the jobs that I'm going to bring back to America. We're going to stop the drugs. We're going to get rid of the criminals. We're going to stop inhibiting immigration agents from doing their jobs. Why is anybody angry? You know, our immigration laws are not about any race, religion, or ethnicity. If they were, I could not have enforced those laws. So we see all these false statements. The media couldn't get there fast enough to publish their articles about how Mr. Khan couldn't go to Canada because of the Trump administration somehow. And then we find out that maybe it's a big, humongous, resounding oops. Oops. Not so much, maybe. That's not journalism. That's not journalism. Now, it's true I know the law a lot better than most journalists. It's what I did for 30 years. I hope I know the law. And I knew where to look. But to get the documentation, and I provide the links in my article for Front Page Magazine, please go to it. Please, if you like it, post it on Facebook and wherever else in the social media. Forward it. I want people to see what's going on. Because facts are stubborn things, as John Adams said. In fact, I used that sentence at the very end of my article. You need to understand the deceitfulness by these reporters. Why didn't they do their homework? Why didn't they ask a simple question? Can the American government keep an American from returning to the United States? Can the U.S. government keep an American from leaving the United States? Two basic questions that go back to the allegations of this guy's statements. They were reviewing my travel privileges. We never saw travel as a privilege for Americans. This isn't communist China. This isn't communist Cuba. This isn't the Soviet Union under Stalin or Khrushchev or Brezhnev. This is America. You're free to come and go as you wish. You know, we'll leave the light on for you, as they say in that motel commercial. If you're going to write this breathless story, shouldn't you do your homework? Isn't that what journalism? That's why they call it news reporting. Report the facts. Special agents and journalists have very similar professions because both professions involve fact-finding. And if you're a journalist and you don't bother finding out if the facts are accurate, then you're not a journalist. You're doing a huge disservice to your profession, to the First Amendment, and to America. And with all the talk about fake news, they should know that people are looking askance at the way these reports are being written. Why in the world didn't those reporters go and look up the law, go and find that handbook online? It took me about 15 seconds doing a Google search to find the handbook for inspectors at the airports, ports of entry, not just airports. Because as soon as you find that section, and it's under 3.1, if I remember correctly, 12.1, Inspection of U.S. Citizens, the Immigration Inspector's Handbook. It's actually Customs and Border Protection, because when I was there, it was called the Immigration Inspector. Now it's CBP, Customs and Border Protection Inspector's Handbook, and it's in Chapter 12.1, Inspection of U.S. Citizens. It's right in my article. Go read it. And when you read it, ask yourself, is there any doubt in your mind about the instructions being given to those inspectors at ports of entry? It is as crystal clear as it gets. This is what is going on in America today. Politicians lying through their teeth. You know, full disclosure, I'm registered as a Democrat. I'm not a conservative. But first and foremost, I'm an American. And yes, I am a populist. I do believe that the U.S. government should be looking out for its own people before it looks out for anyone else, just the way that responsible parents look out for the well-being of their children before they worry about anybody else. And when Nancy Pelosi can jump up and down, and I'm not going to get into the health care issue, because I don't know anything about that. I'll be blunt with you. I don't play games. As a kid, my father would and my mother would be insistent that if I didn't know what I was talking about, that it was better I zip my mouth. You know, my father used to say empty barrels make a lot of noise. I lack any expertise that would make me anyone that you would want to listen to about the healthcare legislation that's being proposed. But I'm mentioning it because I cannot forget Nancy Pelosi standing in front of the microphones under the Obama administration deflecting any questions by saying you will have to pass it to find out what's in it. Can anyone ever forget that? Talk about chutzpah. You won't know what's in the bill after it's voted for. Imagine going into a car dealership and you say to the salesman, sir, I'm looking for a car. And he says, great, we've got a car under that tarp. Can you lift it? What color is it? How many doors? Nope, can't tell you. I'll make you a promise, sign on the dotted line, we will put it in your driveway, and then you will find out how much it's going to cost you, and then you'll find out if it's a stick shift or an automatic, or if it has two doors or four doors, that's when you'll know. But right now, all I can tell you is it's a car. Do you want it, yes or no? That's how Pelosi and the Democrats sold Obamacare to America. And now she's out there jumping up and down, screaming about how the Trump administration and the Republicans are moving too quickly. What happened to full disclosure when it was Obamacare? See, the hypocrisy is what gets to me, and I'm willing to bet, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm willing to bet that it's hypocrisy that gets to just about all of us. Do as I say, not as I do, does not cut it, and it certainly isn't a demonstration of leadership. Leaders hold themselves accountable to a higher standard than they hold anybody else to. And I worked for some very good leaders, and I worked for some jerks just like every other job. And my bosses, who were true leaders, were the ones who set higher standards for themselves, put greater restrictions on themselves than they did for the agents who worked under their command. That's what leadership is about. But I guess Ms. Pelosi never got the memo. I guess Chuck Schumer didn't get the memo, or Lindsey Graham, or Menendez, or John McCain, because they have an agenda. And folks, the agenda is not you, it's not me, and it's not America. And that has to stop. Really, it does. And that's what this program is about, because if you don't know what's going on, it is easy to be taken for a ride, especially when you look at the lousy job that far too many supposed journalists are doing in America today. That's the point to my program. That's why I'm here, and I hope that's why you're joining me, to get to the truth that nobody else wants to talk about. But I would love to know why journalists who ran with the con story were so quick to publish. I mean, I know that they have this feeding frenzy. I want to get there first. For me, as an agent, I had to get there right. Wouldn't it be nice if journalists put integrity and accuracy ahead of speed? But accuracy and integrity ahead of speed. Wow. And when you think about it, that's the problem with the way we've been approving applications and immigration for citizenship, political asylum, and visas. And that's why when the president came out and said we need extreme vetting, he was right. But you back up extreme vetting by having a vibrant interior enforcement mission because the vetting process will always be flawed. It's just that way. And again, that's what Trump is doing. He's looking to triple the number of ICE agents. It's a coordinated approach to make certain that the laws that were designed, and look at the categories of aliens who are supposed to be excluded from the United States. And when you think of those categories, you realize what this is really about. Nothing about race, religion, ethnicity. It's about aliens with dangerous communicable diseases. Let's remember that Ellis Island was a quarantine station. Aliens who are severely mentally ill. Aliens who are criminals, you know, gang members, rapists, murderers, gun runners, drug dealers, human smugglers, right? Aliens who are spies and terrorists and human rights violators and war criminals and fugitives from justice. With that motley crew I just rattled off, who would you like to have move into that apartment next door to where you live with your family? Aliens who are prior deportees. Aliens who would likely become a public charge, or aliens who, if they worked, would be competing unfairly with Americans and displace American workers and or drive down the wages of those Americans fortunate enough to still be able to hold on to their jobs. That's it. That's it. And in conjunction with keeping aliens out of the country who would do harm to us, we're talking about terrorists. And I also cited the Constitution, because when Mr. Khan jumped up and said that Mr. Trump doesn't know the Constitution, Mr. Khan should go back and look at Article 4, Section 4. It's in my article. Who knows? Maybe he'll read it. Maybe he won't. But I hope you read it. The section deals with invasion. The section deals with preventing domestic violence. That's what we're talking about, folks. It's about doing that which the 9/11 Commission so strongly recommended, to make certain that the vulnerabilities in the immigration system that repeatedly permitted terrorists to come to America and attack us. Kansi at the CIA in January of 93, the first Trade Center bombing. By the way, that attack at the CIA killed two CIA officers, wounded three others. Following month, bombing at the Trade Center. Six dead, more than 1,000 injured, $500 million in damages. The Boston Marathon bombing, San Bernardino. I could go through a whole litany. When is enough enough? When is enough enough? And so if what I've talked about this evening has you fired up, and I hope it does, I want you to always remember that democracy is not a spectator sport. What I want you to do is go out there and become involved. Not go crazy like the Looney Tunes that are out there on the other side, the rent-a-mobs. This isn't a mobocracy, but this is America. But please, try to get your voice heard. Have conversations with your neighbors. Those safe spaces on college campuses, they're not safe for us. They're not safe for our children. They're not safe for America. They're safe for the anarchists because they know that if they could shut down debate, then they don't have to worry about somebody like me or others like me coming along and making it clear just how much they're lying, just how wrong they are. They know that their notions, their goals, their objectives cannot withstand scrutiny. That's who's being kept safe in those safe spaces. Just as sanctuary cities don't provide sanctuary to law-abiding individuals, but provide sanctuary for criminals, terrorists, and fugitives from justice and gang members. George Orwell was right. In a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is truly a revolutionary act. But we will tell the truth on this program. So I thank you for joining me. please go to my website, michaelcutler.net, one word, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Please go to capsweb.org, frontpagemag.com, or The Social Contract. Get involved. I hope you have a great weekend, and I look forward to seeing you again, same time next week, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great weekend, everybody. Good night.